Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the February 18th edition of Commodity Week. December corn futures posted a weekly reversal down. Will it be something to fade or play? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with the Vice President of Research for R.J. O'Brien, Rich Feltus. Our panelists in studio today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Greg Johnson of the Andersons from Champaign, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Here are the weekly settlement prices from the CME Group. The overnight and day trade high, low, and settlement and trade from Friday to Friday as the change. The March contract in the wheat pit this week at a high of $8.84¾, the low at $8.17¼. Settlement price there at $8.22¼, down 44¾ from the previous Friday. July harvest month for the soft red at $8.86, finished 39½ lower. March corn futures, a $7.15 top, the bottom at $6.80¼, settled at $7.09¾, up $3¼ from last week. December futures at $6.12¼ were down $5¾. They did put an outside down weekend. Soybeans March contract, $14.24¾ the high, the low at $13.57. Settlement price down 48 cents at $13.68, and the November new crop beans at $13.42 a bushel, finished 47½ lower. February live cattle futures finished at $111.05, up $3.27½. The March feeders at $130.75 were up $4.05 on the week. And the April lean hogs today at $92.27. That weekly trade was up, rather down, one dime.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Our guests in studio again today are Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Greg Johnson of the Andersons from Champaign, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Let's start with this question, gentlemen. New crop December corn futures posted an outside down formation on the weekly charts this week. Is it something to fade or heed?
I would say fade. All signs fail in a true fundamentally bull market, and I think that's what we're in. We've been up 10 of the last 12 weeks, so we were due for a down week. One down week doesn't concern me, and it wasn't down all that much this week. For those that look at charts and try to pick tops in markets, I would refer them to the cotton market. I don't know how many times the cotton market supposedly was over, and yet we made new contract highs this week. So I do not think the corn market is over yet.
And that's Greg Johnson with the Andersons, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Fade or heed?
Well, Todd, the corn market reacted very well considering how the other markets reacted. I think the biggest problem is, as we were discussing here before the show, is what beans and wheat did, and whether the beans are really done. The corn in themselves looks very strong on its own.
And then Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
I'll give you a blend between the two. I think what Greg said in one sense is right, you know, fundamentally kind of a strong market. But I think for the short order, I'd tend to heat it. I think we've got some weakness coming in. I have some cyclic plays on the downside through the month of March, and also beans and wheat ended up soft. So I think we're going to see some downside. How much is really going to be the question? You know, we could have 30, 40 cents and still not break the basic uptrend in the game. But I think short term it's down.
Let's stay with the corn and take up rationing. The cattle on feed numbers were released Friday afternoon. They showed a 6% year-over-year increase in the number of cattle in feedlots of more than 1,000 head at 11.6 million. Placements for January were 4% better than last year at 1.9 million. And disappearance is at an all-time record low, since they've been keeping it anyway since 1996. That's not all that long, but it's a record low nonetheless. It sure looks like the high cattle prices have stimulated that market, and that high corn prices haven't yet stopped any growth there. Can you tell me how the cattle market has changed in the last 4 years that allows this to happen?
You know, it's not just the cattle market. It's the livestock futures in general and the impact that's having back into the feeding industry itself. And we first saw this manifest in 2007. As the corn market went up, people rushed out, bought the back end of meats, thinking that we could see liquidation out of basic breeding herds in the short order and see higher or shorter meat supplies in the long haul out there, thereby justifying seeing higher meat prices. So they bought the back end of the futures. The back end of the futures went up, and the people in the livestock feeding industry, hogs or cattle, either one, went, well, we still got high-priced corn, but it's still workable. And so they had hedged the back end, put the animals in the lot, or keep producing hogs and continue on in business. And that same game is still playing out in the markets here today at this point in time, too. So, you know, in one sense, the futures market and the action we have today compared to 10, 15, 20 years ago is not letting the normal rationing process work like it once did.
Let's take up another industry that uses corn, ethanol. Well, I mean, crude oil at this point. There are persistent $150 to $200 a barrel crude oil discussions in the marketplace. Some say, Greg, that there's a summer spike in these levels. Is that possible again? We did it once already.
Well, I don't know about $150, but I would say there's probably more upside than downside. It amazes me how people talk about the weak oil market, and it drops from maybe 90 to 85. I mean, it wasn't that long ago oil was $35 and $40, so $75, $80 oil is still pretty high priced. I mean, $3 gasoline is still pretty high priced in my book. And so can we go up $15 or $20 more easily than down $15 or $20? I would say yes, we could go up $15 or $20 a lot more easier than we could go down $15 or
$20. Let's get to the rationing side. From time to time, we get wind of trouble in the ethanol industry as it relates to procuring some of this high-priced corn. Does that scare you at all?
Not really, Todd. I think that there's been some of the ethanol plants in parts of Illinois that have had a little trouble buying some corn. We haven't seen any slowdown in the Indiana plants, especially around us. We know that Linden is crushing it at what they used to consider 130%, 125, 130% of what they considered full bore a year ago. So there's a lot of corn going in, and they're producing a lot of ethanol as fast as they can.
You know, one thing in regard to crude that people here need to get comfortable with is not watching the crude that's traded in New York, which is basically a West Texas, because we do have heavy stocks down there, but keeping an eye on the Brent crude, which is basically North Sea. And we've been trading 100 to 105 in that particular market, and we've had that spread to a record-wide level between U.S. and Brent crude. But Brent crude at $100 to $105 is at a real critical area here. If we can't punch through that on the upside, we may be getting kind of toppy for whatever reason. Who knows? And that's just based on some technical numbers.
All right. We all hear the four Fs kind of agricultural commodities, so food, feed, fiber, and fuel. Let's take up the fiber part of it just a bit. Nearby cotton traded to $2, above $2 actually Friday. And while it settled on its low at $1.97, it was still higher for the week, sharply higher for the month. And just for a little guidance here, cotton, because we don't talk about it very often, on the chart I was looking at, range from a high of about $1.10 and 96 to a low of, say, $30 and or 30 cents rather in 2001, the midpoint, something like 60 cents a pound, right? It's a crazy market. Next year's cotton, by the way, just right at a dollar a pound. What, if anything, does it mean to spring row crop plantings?
Well, you know, cotton is going to take some acres, no doubt about it. I think the USDA and their baseline numbers had 12.8 plugged in, up 1.8 million acres. Popular trade talk has been somewhere around 13 for quite some time during time. You know, and it's easy to say that, well, cotton prices are extremely high. They ought to rob a lot of acres. But the other issue we've got in cotton is that in the South and different places, we've shut down a lot of gins. Now, the question is, are we going to reopen some gins? And we need the gins to separate the lint from the seed.
That's very true. Dale's right. Their gins have went down. Also, the cotton pickers are just like a big combine now. They're $300,000 to $500,000, depending on what you're going to do, and they may or may not jump in quite as much. You know, our office down in Arkansas is telling us that we will see quite a bit of cotton pickup along the way, but we've got some mills that are in trouble here right now with the way some of this pricing has happened this year. And if you look at the March, the locked up the limit, quit trading options, locked down the limit, quit trading options. We could have some mills in some financial trouble here in the next month or so.
Back to the commodities, the row crops at hand here in the Midwest. Let's take up wheat and soybeans. They were not pretty over the past week and certainly over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, the Chinese announcements that they're canceling some old crop bean sales and maybe rolling them into the new crop obviously pressured the old crop. Exports have been a little on the weak side for a couple of weeks now, and, you know, quite frankly, stocks are tight, but without demand, I think we can get by with a little bit less. So for the time being, you know, people are getting out of the old crop beans. I think old crop beans lost 80 cents at one point from high to low, whereas the new crop only lost 40 cents. So this has basically been an old crop bean liquidation. The new crop beans, still not very negative on new crop beans until we see how many acres we're going to plant.
Not very negative, but
very friendly beans. Very okay, friendly new crop beans. Crop beans, you know, kind of a different story, but longer term, I would not sell new crop beans, wouldn't think about selling new crop beans at these levels.
Is it the bean market, the wheat market, that could hold the corn market back?
Well, very definitely, Todd. I think that we would have had higher prices in corn on Friday. In fact, we did at different times during the day, but didn't quite hold there. The idea was that the beans need to stabilize a little bit because they were the anchor there today. The cotton, the beans, and the wheat were the anchors in the corn market. We continue to see the corn being much stronger because we're not used to being down to 5% stocks-to-use ratio there. We are used to that in the beans last couple of years, but we're not used to that in the corn at all.
Let's talk about a different ratio, Dale. Have you looked at the new crop corn-soybean spread, and what does it tell you about plantings?
Well, you know, it's down to an extraordinarily tight level. I don't know where we shook out today exactly when we look at the ratio between the two of them, but we've been characteristically pretty tight in here for the last month anyway, and it does tell you that in one sense, you know, we're probably going to plant corn, not beans, if you purely just look at the ratio, but on the other side, you got the cost of putting the crop in. Another thing in regard to total planting, though, we have to think about this year, and it's true across the board, and we've had a lot of talk about the battle for acres, and it'll be interesting to see Rich's perspective. But we're going to end up the month of February with extraordinarily high insurance guarantees on across the board. And you take Champaign County, McLean County, whatever, high-quality land, you can possibly talk about with an 85% revenue policy guaranteeing something $950 an acre, guaranteeing $950 an acre on corn. I mean, that's just out of sight stupendous in one sense. And that's going to bring land into the mix in one way or another. You know, and it's true to a lesser degree once you get outside the Corn Belt. So the big issue is left out. You tell me about the weather and planting season, and I can tell you more about, you know, the acres and the crop.
We had a discussion before we went on the air about the weather and the marketplace from last year. Not the marketplace, but its impact on the corn crop last year. It was the third largest corn crop on record. Yet, I think most of you probably say it was really not a very good corn crop. What happens if we have a good corn crop this year?
Well, a good corn crop would get us way back closer to $5 corn again, maybe $4.50 corn again, Todd, because that would put some of that extra corn back in there. It's going to take our stocks to use ratio and get us a few more weeks down the road, because I think that there's going to be a lot of things go on. We had a lot of weather problems the world around. We had La Nina. We had all of the other things sitting back. If we can get a good crop out there, get plenty of acres, and up the bushel yield, 4 to 5 bushel, we could be in a situation where we're feeling very comfortable rather than not. Now, I know that the feelings out there are that this can't be solved in 1 year from where we're at, but we could get a lot closer to being comfortable rather than uncomfortable come next year.
From your perspective, in an elevator, can it be solved in a year?
No. Ending stocks are very tight, and even if we do come up with a trend line or slightly above trend line yield, we're still going to have to compete for acres again in 2012.
Yeah, he's right on that mix. We could make the situation maybe a little more comfortable or less uncomfortable, however you want to put it, but we don't go back to any surpluses right away either.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This one was recorded on the 18th day of February. When we return, our guest will be R.G. O'Brien's Vice President of Research, Rich Peltis.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. A major change in the weather took place this week across Illinois. South and southwesterly winds drew in warmer air to the Midwest, and the result was gradually warmer weather and the disappearance or drastic reduction in the snow cover across the state. Temperatures were slow to warm over central and northern Illinois this week because of the extensive snow cover, but had little trouble reaching the 60s and 70s in southern Illinois. The southern extent of 1 inch or more of snow retreated from along Interstate 70 last weekend to along Interstate 80 by Thursday morning. The melting of the snow and resultant runoff into streams and rivers caused many to rise during the week, but only a few locations were near flood stage by late week. Fortunately, it has been dry with only a little rain in northern and central Illinois during the week. Our encounter with spring-like weather will be temporarily suspended next week as some colder air pushes into the state behind a cold front on Monday. A few showers may accompany that front, but more substantial precipitation could develop as a low-pressure wave rides northeast along the front on late Monday and Tuesday. That could bring rain to southern Illinois and rain or rain changing to snow across central Illinois late Monday afternoon into Tuesday morning. Another system may affect Illinois by late in the week with even more precipitation. Temperatures next week on the whole should be near to a little above average. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This edition was recorded the 18th day of February. Our panelists in studio today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. On the phone line with us, Vice President of Research for R.J. O'Brien, Rich Peltis. Rich, thank you for taking the time with us today. I'm wondering, since you do the research, what's the most interesting fundamental or technical research you've been looking at in the last week?
In the last week? Well, that's a great question. I would say one has to be impressed with the fact that we scored new highs in corn this week after what appeared to be an early week technical breakdown on the release of the baseline numbers, and the fact that we were able to come back so strong yesterday. We had somewhat of a setback today, but as your other panelists have indicated, it was a pretty impressive performance in corn given the extreme pressure that we had in the soybean and the wheat market. So I would say the most interesting item, I think, of the week is the stunning performance of the corn market.
Hey, Rich, China has been a big buyer of U.S. beans, Australian wheat, other commodities, but not corn. Does the news this week that they're lowering their import tariffs on food imports bode well for maybe them possibly buying corn somewhere in the near future?
Possibly, but you know, my best source on this is Tom Doerr with the U.S. Grains Council, and he's of the opinion that if they do start buying, it's not going to be until April forward. And indeed, as you've suggested, they are looking at lowering import duties, but there hasn't been anything officially announced as yet. In fact, I think that was somewhat of the disappointment for the setback in our ag markets today, that we did not get confirmation of that, those lowering food imports. But with the very high $8-plus corn prices internally in China, the fact that their meat prices are very high, which to me suggests a shortage of feed grains in the country, the food inflation that is ongoing, and the you know, almost constant drumbeat out of Beijing reassuring the world that they have sufficient corn stocks, it all seems a little suspect. Now, we've been talking about China, you know, being a large corn importer actually for a decade or more. This is a point Joe Glauber made last week at the Commodity Markets Council down in Florida, the chief economist. But I would say that the bulk of the evidence is that we are at that tipping point, and they are very soon near the point where they're going to need to import more feed grains.
You know, we both feel that the corn markets closed very strong this week, and we were impressed with that. The bean market did just the opposite. What's your feeling about next week in the bean market?
Well, I would say next week we're going to be, you know, ramping up to the USDA's first S&Ds that will be released Friday morning out at the USDA Outlook Forum. Unlike corn, there is some sign of rationing in soybeans. We have an improving supply situation in South America. The cancellations, as was already mentioned, of old crop U.S. soybeans have spooked the market, and there's a fear that there could be more. I think it's probable, at least for the time being, we've seen the low water mark in the USDA's old crop soybean carryover forecast. That's not to say that beans can't go out and put in new highs when we get on the other side of the acreage report or actually into spring growing conditions and see how things unfold and whether or not we're going to get this 10 million more all-crop acres that USDA set on their baseline. But for now, I would say the bloom is off the rose. The highs are likely in for now. But we've got a lot of growing season, a lot of the marketing year still ahead of us.
Rich, this is Dale, and with the Outlook Forum coming up in here and just having had the baseline acreage numbers here this last week, what are your expectations for what they'll tell us on acreage on this week in the forum, and how does that compare with where you think at this point the acreage mix might shake out?
Excellent question. You know, the same analysts that do the baseline are basically the same people in place that are going to do the WASD forecast for 11-12 coming up here next Friday. Just a little bit of history on that, and I think this was well discussed in the marketplace this week. There is a very strong history of USDA overestimating total acres on their baseline forecast versus final. In fact, we've only hit the seeded baseline acres once in 13 years, and that, I think, was in 1998. Since USDA did their baseline, as you know, corn prices have rallied quite a bit, cotton even more. If there is a shift, it should be into more cotton and even more corn than the 92 million acres the USDA gave us in baseline. But all of those are on very tenuous assumptions. That is, prevent plant going down to minimal levels, maximizing double crop, moving out into the western plains west of the 100th meridian where our summer fallow acreage is, more continuous cropping out there. Is it possible to get the kind of gains USDA gave us in the baseline? It's possible, but I think the market with its price action this week said it's not probable. So I think we'll do well to get a number, 92.5 perhaps in the corn acreage and the soybean acreage, which they gave us in baseline, just up 300,000 acres. I think the soybean acreage number is going to do well to be even unchanged from last year, given what's going on in cotton and the fact that we had more winter wheat acres put out on the January intentions at what USDA posted in their baseline.
Kind of two questions for you. How many acres, extra acres, do you think that are available? Most would say there's a fluctuation of 10 to 12 million from the top end of the range to the bottom end of the range, that maybe last year total acres, row crop that is, was on the bottom end of the range. Is there 10 or 12 extra million acres there? And then you divided those up, but and so did USDA, and they came up with that many acres.
Mm-hmm.
But 92.5, which is a half million more than what USDA came out this week, doesn't look like it's quite enough to make the market for corn work.
Well, no. And I would also add that the largest year-to-year gain that we have seen over the last decade in U.S. acres, I believe, was about 5.5 million acres, and that was in 1990. That was in 2008, and that was in a year when we had very low prevent plant. Last year, we had over 5.5 million acres of prevent plant. In 2008, it was under 1.5 million acres of prevent plant acres. So, in terms of a 92 million acre type figure, then it revolves into what the discussion is about yield and how the trend line yield is going to advance in the coming year. One item that I've seen into my inbox that I think is worthy of some discussion among all the panelists and my network is whether or not the disappointing yield last year in corn may have been at least partially related to overpopulation of the field. As you know, they go with higher plant pops every year. There's some studies that have been done that would suggest that almost all of the increase in U.S. corn yield trend over the last 10 years can be attributed to advancing plant population. Certainly, there's a genetics element, but a lot of it has been plant population. And last year, can one make the case that we just simply hit the wall with these high plant populations in trying to achieve successively higher yields? So those are issues that I think are at the forefront. And the backdrop, of course, is with the tightest global coarse grain stocks to use ratio in USDA's 40 years of data history. There's just no margin for hiccups or errors. It's going to be a spring market that is so hypersensitive to the timeliness of the crop going in and how the conditions under which it's going in and then how the weather subsequently unfolds. So even with additional acres, the big variable in any crop is really the yield, and the yield won't be determined until well on into the midsummer and beyond.
Rich, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. We do appreciate it.
Okay, my pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Rich Feltes is with R.J. O'Brien, where he serves as their vice president of research. Time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Greg Johnson.
Todd, I would say that there's a lot of unknowns out there. We don't know how many acres we're going to plant. We don't know about yields, and we don't know about Chinese demand. Until some of those questions get answered, I still think there's more upside potential than downside.
Wayne Nelson of L&M?
I'd have to agree with Greg. I think we have some potential to the upside, but we're going to see a short period of moving down until we get some good news.
And Dale Durkles of AgriVisor?
Although there's no track from getting to point A to point B, middle to the end of 2011, I have some major commodity cycle lows coming up here. So I'm look at that every day and every market performance and what it tells me.
We'll have to talk to you about that at another time. Dale Durkles, of course, is with AgriVisor out of Bloomington. Greg Johnson of the Andersons from Champaign. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Our guest once again, Rich Feltes. He's with R.J. O'Brien, and he joins us from Nashville, Tennessee. This has been Commodity Week for the 18th day of February. Have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.